Hello, everyone, and welcome to the WWE Podcast. My name is Jeff Johnson. We're going to be breaking down this past Saturday's All Elite Wrestling Revolution pay-per-view. Before we get started, I want to give a special shout-out to the WWE Podcast for giving me this opportunity to jump on here and do a breakdown of this show. You guys are amazing. I appreciate you guys giving me this opportunity. Hopefully this goes well. A little bit about myself. I am a podcaster. I've been podcasting for a little over a year and a half. I do a mixed martial arts podcast. Previously did a pro wrestling podcast for about 100 episodes. Unfortunately, I left that podcast early this year, late last year, sometime around there, and ventured into the mixed martial arts podcast full time. But I appreciate the WWE podcast, you guys, for coming and giving me this opportunity. So let's get into it, guys. As you guys know, All Elite Wrestling had Revolution this past Saturday. It was an incredible show from top to bottom. I know the talk between AEW and WWE, especially on Twitter, is very, very back and forth. I mean, you definitely have your WWE guys. You have your AEW guys. Everybody clashes. I wish the majority was more where people were fans of both, because I try to be a fan of both. There's things I love about Raw, I love about SmackDown, NXT, AEW. Wrestling right now is just in such a great place. And this past Saturday at Revolution was no different. Yes, I know the big talk of the wrestling world right now is the Saudi Arabia show, people not liking what happened, a few things that happened in that show. But, you know, it is what it is. And AEW showed us this past Saturday what a fun wrestling show can be like. So with that being said, guys, let's get into it. This is AEW Revolution from this past Saturday, live from Chicago, Illinois. We had a match on the pre-show between the Dark Order and SCU. SCU, of course, was represented by Frankie Kazarian and Scorpio Sky, Evo Uno and Stu Grayson for the Dark Order. You know, this was a good match that I really enjoyed. The Dark Order have kind of been one of the talking points of the wrestling world lately, especially with a certain Broken Brilliance leaving the WWE, as he announced on Sunday night that possibly he could be coming to AEW, being a part of the Dark Order. So I was a little surprised to see the Dark Order on the pre-show here. I thought going into this that they would have something on the main card, but it did get them out there. They were on free TV, and of course they have had their go-arounds with SCU lately. Everybody kind of wondering where Christopher Daniels stands. What side is he on? They had this tag match. It was a good match, very back and forth, and the Dark Order ended up picking up the victory, which I think is the right move. Especially with the reveal of the Exalted One coming up soon, you know, you want to put a little bit of heat on the Dark Order. You want to get them going. So whenever this reveal happens, you know, it's going to mean a lot more. I don't think this hurts SCU at all, especially because after the match, the Dark Order attacked SCU, and then we saw a man in a cloak come out and start walking down the ramp. You know, we all started thinking it's the Exalted One. The Exalted One is here. I kind of thought otherwise. I was like, okay, it's on the pre-show. I don't know if they're going to do the Exalted One right now. I think it's going to be more of a Dynamite thing when they do that. But the man in the cloak revealed himself, and it was the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels. He leaps over the ropes and clotheslines Evil Uno and starts taking out the Dark Order. The good guys end up standing tall as the pre-show comes to an end. But it was a good match. You know, SCU was able to stand tall. The Dark Order got the victory. So I think this worked out for everybody. Just great tag team match. And if anybody was kind of on the fence of ordering Revolution, I think this was a good way to put it over and get ready for the main show. So let's get into the main show itself, guys. The opening match we got was Dustin Rhodes versus Jake Hager. This was a match I personally was looking forward to because we haven't seen Jake Hager in an AEW ring yet. And Dustin, of course, is, you know, defying the laws of time and has been putting on some of the best work of his career ever since he came to AEW. You know, this match was actually a little more back and forth than I thought it was going to be. I thought this was going to be a match more to showcase Hager. I thought Hager was going to be, you know, more dominant in it, but Dustin was able to get a lot of his stuff in. He had a great comeback because Hager, there were moments in the match where Hager was pretty dominant. But I love the spot where Dustin blocked the low blow and was able to counter it, but Hager was still able to get the victory. So I thought that was really good. The standing arm triangle has been something everybody's been kind of talking about, Jake Hager using as a finisher. I don't mind it because Jake Hager does have this MMA background. You know, he won his first professional, or his second professional fight, excuse me, in Bellator with an arm triangle. So it is a move that he uses, and using it standing wise, it kind of shows that he can put it in, you know, put it on out of nowhere, and it makes it for a good submission. So it works well with him, especially with him being 6'5", 260 or whatever, you know, being a massive dude, that he can put that on anybody, anytime and win matches. So, I was perfectly okay with Jake Hager winning in that fashion. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a good match. I really enjoyed this as an opener. After this, we got a commercial for something called AEW Dynamite Blood and Guts. It's going to be on March 25th, live from New York, New Jersey. It's going to be an episode of Dynamite. But the major news thing coming out of this is that it's going to be essentially a War Games match, which... You know, WWE, I guess, has the rights to War Games. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know the technicality of exactly how this would work. But they did make it known that the cage would have a top on it. It'd be two rings, and that's about most of the details that we got. We don't know how many members are going to, or how many people are going to be in it, you know, what teams are going to be in it, how they're going to do it. Don't know exactly, but it essentially is a War Games match. And with there being the top on top, you know, with having the roof on top of it, I'm pretty excited because it's going to have that real classic type of War Games feel. And I love the War Games that TakeOver does. I think it's great. You know, they can do some really cool stuff on top of the cell with there not being a roof on top of it. But it just doesn't quite have that feel that the classic 1980s, 1990s War Games matches for WCW and NWA had. So I'm really excited that they're going to be doing this. If I had a guess, I think it would have to be somebody, you know, some guys in the Elite, which I know obviously we'll do a little bit later that they're having their issues right now. But yeah, it's got to be somebody with the Elite. I guess you could do the Dark Order potentially, but I figure it's got to be the Inner Circle. Just the Elite Inner Circle has been building up for so long that people have wanted that big super match between the two groups, and this would be the best time to do it, in my opinion, would be in War Games, so or Blood and Guts, I guess. I guess gotta be careful with that. But that is going to be March 25th in New York, New Jersey, and that's going to be a big one, guys. That's actually in a couple weeks, so be looking out for that. That's going to be a huge show. After this, we got a big sleeper match, in my opinion, between Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin. This match was very interesting because Sammy Guevara made his entrance and Darby Allin came out and attacked Sammy at ringside. So this match didn't officially get started. These guys started fighting around everywhere. The big spot early, though, was Sammy Guevara put Darby Allin on a table and went up top and hit a 630 from the top to the outside through a table. This was an incredible spot. It was, I don't think I've ever seen somebody do this to the outside through a table. I mean, this is so dangerous because, you know, the smallest miscalculation, something could go wrong. But Sammy hit it perfectly. Darby took it perfectly. It was a very, very impressive spot. And it works out really well, in my opinion, too, because this gives the heel Sammy Guevara a leg up in the start of the match because, you know, with Darby attacking Sammy on the outside early, the match never officially started. So Darby gets back in the ring, Sammy gets in there afterwards, and the match ends up starting. Sammy takes over for most of the match. And Sammy actually, there was one spot that was kind of scary in this one, where Sammy went to the top and hit a Spanish fly on Darby, but he slipped for a second, but he was able to catch himself and hit the Spanish fly. It was really impressive. After this happened, Darby fought back, was able to hit a flipping stunner to take over in the match. And I gotta mention after this that Darby went to the top to set up for the coffin drop. And this could have easily been the biggest pop of the night. It was, the crowd went absolutely insane when Darby Allin went up top because he's such a big star. People are crazy about Darby Allin now. And the second he went up for that coffin drop, every single person in the stands stood up. They were cheering. He hits the coffin drop on Sammy Guevara and gets the victory. And the crowd just went absolutely crazy for it. You know, so it shows that how great of a job AEW has done in building up Darby Allin and building up Sammy Guevara also, because Guevara has kind of became that heel that, you know, you love to hate. And, you know, Darby's really the perfect foil for Sammy, in my opinion. And I think this is a feud that can go on for a very, very long time. Both guys are still really young, especially Sammy. You know, they both have a bright future. I see a lot of money in this feud, especially in the long run. These guys work very, very well together, and they're both just going to keep growing and both keep getting better. So I'm really excited to see where this feud goes over the next few years. Overall, I thought the match was good. You know, the main story was the fight beforehand, because the match only went about 5 minutes, but the fight beforehand lasted a little bit longer than that too. So altogether it's probably about 12, 13 minutes or so. But both the guys worked really well. This is, like I said, this is a feud I am looking forward to in the long run, because both these guys bring so much to the table. They both have a lot of charisma. Darby Allin's already getting a huge following. So this is a great feud. I cannot wait to see where it goes. All right. So after this, we got a video package highlighting the AEW World Tag Team title match between Hangman Page and Kenny Omega versus the Young Bucks. If you guys don't remember, the Young Bucks won a battle royal to get this number one contender spot. And on Being the Elite, you can tell there's a little bit of mistrust, a little bit of, it's not hate, I guess, but a lot of mistrust especially between the Young Bucks and Hangman Page, and even between Hangman and Kenny as well. Kenny got asked in an interview if he could trust Hangman, and he was very hesitant to answer it, and Hangman was not happy about it. But guys, if you know all four of these guys, you've seen these four guys wrestle, you know what kind of match we were in store for. And I know you guys have probably read about it online. You guys have seen it. If you have, you guys know this is one of, in my opinion, the best tag team matches I have seen. I don't know if I want to use the word ever, because that's a long time. I've been watching wrestling for over 25 years. So saying the best tag team match ever is maybe a little far to go, but definitely the best one I've seen since probably DIY versus The Revival in TakeOver. That's probably the last match that I can remember that was this good, which, you know, was an instant classic. So this one was amazing. I'm not going to go step by step, you know, spot by spot for this one, because if I did, this would be a 4-hour show, just because these guys went fast paced nonstop for 30 minutes and just threw completely everything out there. It was absolutely insane, this match that they put on. I did want to mention the entrances. I thought it was very interesting that when the Young Bucks came out, they were booed by the crowd. And I thought that was a very interesting reaction for them to get. I thought it'd be at least a mixed reaction, but it wasn't. It was mostly boos. Hangman came out and the place erupted. Chicago went crazy for Hangman Page. But when Kenny came out, it was a different kind of atmosphere. It was that big star, you know, like that. When he walks out, it's just Kenny Omega is just something special. And you knew it as soon as he walked out. He probably got the biggest pop in the entrance. But what was interesting also is that once everybody got in the ring, it was Hangman Page. You know, people were chanting, you know, the Cowboy S, you know, stuff like that. They were going crazy for Hangman Page. So this match, guys, I mean, I could sit here and talk about this match for 2 hours. And I'm not going to do justice of how good it is. If you guys have not watched this match, even if you guys are not the biggest AEW fans, if you guys are just wrestling fans in general, go watch this tag team match, because it's entertaining. It's 30 minutes of these guys putting everything on the line, and just, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible, guys. A couple of spots I do want to talk about, though. I thought there was a spot towards the end of the match where the Young Bucks hit an Indy Taker on Hangman on the outside. I thought that was a big spot. I thought that was a spot that was kind of going to give the win for the Young Bucks, because that's a big move, and that's one of their finishers on the outside, and I thought that was going to be it. But they did a great spot in the ring afterwards where the Young Bucks hit the Golden V-Trigger, which is a spot that Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi did in New Japan. It was pretty much a double V-Trigger while holding on to the opponent's arms, and it's a very devastating move. They hit that, and I can't remember which Buck it was, but one of the Bucks makes a pin. Kenny kicks out at one, and the crowd goes nuts for this because Kenny starts, for lack of a better term, hulking up, and the crowd just going absolutely insane for it. The Young Bucks end up taking advantage, and they're about to hit a Meltzer driver on the inside on Kenny. Hangman Page shows up, and he grabs Nick. Nick's about to do a springboard into the Meltzer driver. He grabs Nick and powerbombs him through the timekeeper's table, and it was an awesome spot. Crowd went crazy for this too. So after Nick went through the table, Hangman and Kenny end up hitting the Buckshot V-Trigger combination on Matt. And I personally thought it was over, but Matt ended up kicking out. It was an amazing near fall. I thought it was over. They had been working on the Young Bucks, that is, had been working on Kenny's shoulder throughout the match. And Kenny picked up Matt to hit the One Winged Angel, but he couldn't hit it. He couldn't get Matt over enough to do the move. So Kenny drops Matt, and Hangman ends up tagging himself in, and he hits the One Winged Angel on Matt, which, you know, was an incredible sight, because I'm not the biggest follower of New Japan. I did follow some of when Kenny was there, but I don't know if anybody else has ever hit a One Winged Angel before. Paige ended up hitting it on Matt, and right before the three count, Nick broke it up. And after this, Hangman hit a Buckshot Lariat to Nick on the ramp, and then came back and hit a Buckshot Lariat on Matt in the ring, and that was all she wrote. Still your AEW World Tag Team Champions, Adam Page and Kenny Omega. Oh man, guys, this match is incredible. Like I said, I did this match no justice. This is a match you guys have to see to believe, because there's so many spots in it, so many that I didn't bring up. The big spots were perfect. The timing was perfect. It was an incredible match, guys. It was really good. After the match was over, the Young Bucks walked over to Hangman and Kenny and offered a handshake and, you know, a condolence to him and all that stuff. Kenny was a little reluctant, but he did end up giving a handshake to the Bucks, and the Bucks offered Hangman to come to the ring come to the middle of the ring and celebrate. And Hangman kind of stood there for a second and then stepped out of the ring. So obviously there's still gonna be a little animosity there between Hangman and the Bucks. But what happened after this is what's really kind of getting everybody talking. Is Hangman got to the ramp, or pretty much on the apron, and he turns around and he's looking back into the ring where the Bucks and Kenny are. The Bucks get out of the ring, and Hangman drops the tag team title and grabs the top rope like he's about to do a Buckshot to Kenny in the ring. And right before he does, Kenny turns around and Hangman kind of stands there. And Hangman kind of lets go and goes, "Okay, Kenny, let's go, man. Let's go to the back." And Kenny gets out of the ring. They embrace, they hug, they walk up the ramp as the champions. But that subtle tease, though, that subtle tease was something that is so well done. Because now, anytime these guys are out there together, that's what's going to be on all the fans' minds. Like, when is it happening? When is Hangman going to turn on Kenny? Personally, guys, I'm still on the mindset that I think Kenny's going to turn on Paige. I don't think it's going to be the other way around. Because I think Kenny's going to get wind of this, of Hangman considering attacking Paige. And I think it's time that we see a heel Kenny Omega. You know, we haven't seen him in a heel since he was in the Bullet Club in New Japan. And for those that remember him, he was an awesome heel. I said the same thing about Finn Balor to a lot of my friends, that I've never seen Finn Balor as Prince Devitt in New Japan before he turned heel on NXT. I told him, I said, "Guys, I'm like, Finn Balor is an amazing heel, and you guys just haven't seen it yet because he's been a babyface his entire time on NXT and on the main roster. And now that he's turned heel, everybody's like, wow, you're right. You know, he's awesome." I was like, and then Kenny Omega is the same way for, you know, you AEW fans that have not watched New Japan, that don't know exactly who the cleaner is, know exactly who Kenny Omega is or was in New Japan. He's an amazing heel. So I would love to see a heel Kenny Omega versus a face Hangman Page, especially with the reactions that Hangman was getting during this match, because the crowd was strongly, strongly behind Hangman this entire match. So they really want to like this guy. So I don't think turning him heel is the best way to go. I think if you're going to turn anybody, turn Kenny. Let Kenny kind of get that edge to him that he had at New Japan. I think it worked out best for everybody. All right, guys. Well, after talking about that, we did have a little cool down, a little bit of a cool down match here. We had the AEW Women's Championship match between the champion Nyla Rose and the challenger Chris Statlander. Guys, me personally, would hopefully you guys will learn about me eventually, is that I'm a huge Chris Statlander fan. Ever since she debuted on AEW Dark, I have watched this girl and went, man, she is incredible. There's really, really good stuff about her, especially since they keep mentioning she's only been wrestling for 3 years and she's still young. She's got a bright future ahead of her, but she does a lot of subtle things that are very, very impressive. And her facial expressions are good. The way her timing is, her moving in the ring, it's stuff that you see out of some seasoned veterans that I'm very, very impressed with her. And I think she's going to be a staple of this women's division for a long, long time. And I know the women's division AEW gets a lot of flack sometimes because, yeah, I guess you could say it is the, for lack of a better term, worst part of the show, just because it's not as developed. You know, the women come from all different parts of the world. We've seen this. And a lot of times, a lot of different styles, it takes a bit for them to mesh together. And I think this has a lot to do with the women's division as well. The men's division, I mean, you know, you have the elite, you have the big names, you have Pac, you have Moxley, you have all these guys. A lot of these guys have worked together for a long time. And so that chemistry, a lot of it's already built there. Cody as well. I thought Cody in there too. See, with the females, it's a little bit different in my opinion because they're still learning to adjust to each other's style. And a lot of them are adjusting to being on TV for the first time also. And I think we're slowly starting to see that. Everybody's starting to get a little more comfortable, especially Nyla Rose. Nyla Rose is one that's I've thought that about. I remember when I first saw her when she debuted on the press conference. I think it was early last year. She looked scared. She looked nervous. She looked like she didn't want to be there. And I could tell. I was like, man, like this woman is impressive, but there's something about her. She's not ready yet. But Nyla Rose has completely made a 180, and she is a legitimate champion as the women's champion. And I'm a big fan of hers. Chris Statlander, like I said, I think she is one of the cogs that's gonna keep make this women's division move forward, along with Britt Baker. I agree with Britt Baker, especially with her recent heel turn. I think Statlander versus Baker is gonna be a huge feud, probably sooner than later. That's could potentially put the AEW women's division on the map, and at least put on a higher pedestal. But with that being said, for tonight, for this match, we had Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander. Guys, this is a tough match. Mostly because of what went on before this match. It is impossible for anybody to follow that tag team match that went on before this. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter how good they are. When you have arguably a five-star perfect tag team match before that, any match that goes after it is going to be very difficult to follow. With that said, though, I thought these ladies did fine. I thought the match was okay. You know, you could tell these two have not worked a whole lot together. But I think they had a lot of pressure on them, especially going on after that tag team match. There was a couple of spots that were a little scary, especially towards the end. Statlander went for a superplex and she slipped off the top. But thankfully, she's ridiculously strong, and Nyla Rose is a freak athlete because Nyla was able to flip out of it and land about as well as she could in the ring. So definitely a dodge bullet there because that could have been really bad. But after this, Nyla ended up hitting a top rope beast bomb on Statlander, and she kind of, I guess you could say, she kind of landed high on it, a little more on the upper back of Statlander. It looked kind of dangerous. It looked like kind of a rough landing. But that move was enough for Nyla Rose to successfully defend her title. So Nyla Rose still the AEW Women's Champion. Yeah, overall the match was fine, guys. And I know a lot of people online were talking about how they didn't like the match, and you know, just this was a horrible one. I heard people were saying, "Oh, just another typical AEW women's match." I think that's too harsh. I really do. I think the AEW women's division is growing. I think it's getting in a better place. And we saw, and there were some good moments between Nyla Rose and Chris Statlander. And I personally believe in this division, and I know that it's going to move forward and it's going to get better. So everybody just be calm, enjoy it, and just wait, because eventually you guys are going to be talking about how good these ladies are, and it's going to be sooner than later, I promise. All right, so next we had a match that a lot of people have been waiting for, me personally also. Ever since MJF turned on Cody at Full Gear, we've been kind of waiting for this match. But MJF versus the American Nightmare Cody. MJF comes out first with Wardlow. Just amazing heat. Amazing heat for this guy. I am personally a big MJF fan. Obviously, he would not be a fan of me because I'm not as good as him, because he's better than me and I know it. So he would not be a fan of me whatsoever. But he is arguably one of the best heels in the company right now. His mannerisms, his promos, everything. He's not afraid to be a great heel. I know I'm preaching to the choir right now, because I know every single person listening right now is going, oh yeah, we know this. MJF's an amazing heel. Okay. He's also 23, 24 years old, guys. And he's going to be an amazing heel his entire career. If he's not a heel his entire career, that's a mistake, because this guy is absolutely incredible. Well, then we got the arrival of the American Nightmare Cody. And Cody had his entire entourage come down the ring with him. But one thing that really stuck out about Cody's entrance is he has a little bit of new ink on him. It's not on his arm. It's not on his back. Not on his chest. It's on his neck. On the right side of his neck? Yeah, on the right side of his neck. There is a huge symbol of his American Nightmare logo. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm a tattoo guy. I have tattoos myself. I'm a tattoo fan. But I always felt like, just me personally, with neck tattoos, you get a neck tattoo when you have lots of tattoos all over you already. So when I saw this on Cody, it just kind of like, it feels kind of out of place. It just, I like the tattoo. I like the design. I think it looks good. It feels like it's randomly stamped on his neck. And it bugged me. It bothered me throughout this entire match. I know it shouldn't, but it really did. I couldn't stop looking away from it. I was just like, man, that thing really, really sticks out. And I know most of you guys have probably already seen it, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. And from what I've heard, Brandy kind of feels the same way about it too. She's not the biggest fan. But anyways, Cody comes out. He's got this new tattoo, but he's also played to the ring by Downstate, which is the band that plays his entrance theme. So they played Cody to the ring, which was really cool, because there have been rumors about it, but we didn't see any of the equipment on stage, nothing like that. So we thought, okay, well, I guess maybe they're not going to do it. Well, Cody did his entrance from coming up from the stage, but then the chandelier goes up and there's Downstate behind him playing him to the ring. And I thought that was really cool. Really cool visual. They did a great job. The song was great. I thought it was really good. Cody came to the ring. He was flanked by Brandy, Arn Anderson, Dustin Rhodes, and there's a couple other people too. I forgot off the top of my head who they were. But they all walked down and kind of, you know, wished Cody good luck. And so we finally got it, guys. We got the one-on-one match we were waiting for, Cody versus MJF. You know, Cody had went through the gauntlet to try to get to this match. He had the cage match with Wardlow, the 10 lashes, couldn't touch MJF over the last couple of months. So this was it. This was Cody finally getting his retribution on MJF. And everybody knew Cody's going to come in. Cody's going to get the win. Cody's going to get his revenge. It didn't happen, guys. MJF comes out with the victory in this one. He hit a double cross on Cody during the match. Cody was able to kick out. Towards the end of the match, MJF grabbed the foot of Cody and was pretty much begging him for forgiveness and telling him he's sorry. And he kind of climbed up Cody as Cody was standing there, and he completely spits in Cody's face. And Cody gets pissed off, grabs him, hits a crossroads, hits another crossroads, and didn't go for the pin. He was trying to make MJF pay, and that's kind of where Cody's downfall was. Cody went to grab MJF, and MJF decks him with a right hand. And then the cameras are the perfect spot to show MJF with his back turned to the ref, and he has the diamond ring on his hand. He takes the ring off and puts it in his tights. And after that, Cody's out cold. MJF pins him, gets the victory. So I think this is a great story. I think this is the perfect way to do this. I think MJF should have won this match, because you think about everything that Cody went through to get to this. You know, we mentioned him earlier, and he got so close. He got his hands on MJF like he wanted to, but he did not get that victory though. And this is exactly how I wanted them to book this match. And this is exactly what they did. So now MJF can go around and say, you know, Cody did everything in his power to get the match. he sacrificed everything, but he got his match and he lost because I'm MJF and I'm better than he is. And then now you can continue this to Double or Nothing. So now Cody can come out and he can throw something else on the line. I've had the idea for the last couple of months that Cody should throw his EVP status on the line. And it would, you know, it would give it a real feeling. You could get the other members of the Elite involved to tell him not to do it. He can't do it. And Cody could kind of be on his own saying, yes, I can. You know, I helped make this company. I'm an MVP. I can do what I want. I can do this. And, you know, he could put that on the line against against MJF. So just to kind of a guess, that's why I feel like they're going. Maybe not to that extent, but I feel like Cody's going to do something to get one more match in MJF, probably a Double or Nothing. But the match was good. The match was really good. MJF actually in this match. He bled in this match. I thought it was going to be Cody because Cody bleeds in every single match that he's in. But surprisingly, he didn't. It was MJF that bled. He bled quite a bit, too. It was a pretty decent gig job. But the match was good. There's a high pedestal on this show because of that tag team match, and every single match is pretty much going to be compared to that tag team match. Was this match as good as that match? No, it wasn't. But this was more of your classic storytelling, for lack of a better term, WWE-style match between Cody and MJF, which we've seen Cody have in the past, especially that amazing match with Dustin at Double or Nothing last year. That was a WWE-style match that was really good. This one, not up to the match, the Dustin-Cody match, but still a very, very good match, and it told a great story, and the fact that it's going to continue is even better. I like that they're not stopping this now. This is a feud that you can push for the next year between these two guys. I hope this doesn't end soon. I hope this gets even more personal and even darker, because it definitely can. So, I'm very, very excited and very happy with how they went with this match. It worked for everybody, in my opinion. All right, so after this, we got technically our co-main event of the evening, which was Pac versus Orange Cassidy. I had seen some people on Twitter were talking about, oh, we forgot this match was even coming on. Like, we were ready for the main event. We were ready for Moxley and Jericho. And then they showed the video package for this, and it was like, oh, okay. Well, oh, yeah, we're getting Orange Cassidy versus Pac. And so I'll let you guys know about myself real quick. I'm a huge Pac fan. I've been a fan with his since he was Pac back in the Dragon Gate days before he joined WWE and he became Neville. I've been a fan of his for a very, very long time. Orange Cassidy, I like his demeanor. I like how he is out of the ring, especially with his stuff with the Best Friends and how he is with on Being the Elite and stuff like that. But I was never a big fan of his in-ring work. I thought it was okay. I thought, you know, I do get the gimmick and I understand the gimmick and I am a fan of it. I was never really impressed with his in-ring work that I had seen, which is limited because I haven't seen a whole lot of it. So it was a small sample size of what I had seen. But I'll tell you guys right now, my opinion has changed completely about Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy and Pac went in and had arguably one of the most fun matches of the entire night. You know, was it this super spot fest crazy match that the tag team match was? No. Was it this blood feud, you know, between Cody and MJF? No. But what it was just a fun professional wrestling match. That's what this was. And Orange Cassidy showed that he has one of the best comebacks maybe in pro wrestling right now, especially when he spends the first half of the match being so nonchalant, you know, so sloth-like, and then he just hits that, he goes from first gear to fifth gear just instantly, and his moves look crisp, he looks really good, and he's going against a guy that looks very crisp and has great moves as well in Pac. So, two things that stood out to me that Orange Cassidy did very well. He threw a Superman punch that, and when I say this, I want you guys to know I'm not a Roman Reigns hater, but that was better than any Superman punch I've seen Roman Reigns throw. And then he hits this move called the Slumdog Millionaire, which is pretty much a suplex countered into a DDT. And it was super impressive. It was a great looking move. And then Orange Cassidy went up and hit a diving DDT off the top rope, which is a move that I love. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think Enzo used to do it in WWE, but it's a very good looking move, and I've always enjoyed it. But after he hit this, the Lucha Bros came down and attacked the best friends. But Chucky T came over and was able to take him away. But what this did is this distracted Cassidy, and Pac was able to take Cassidy down, slap on the Brutalizer submission for the victory. So your winner of the match was Pac. But, you know, Pac gets the victory and is definitely not hurt in the victory. But this was a star-making performance for Orange Cassidy. This was all about moving Orange Cassidy up the food chain, pretty much, for lack of a better term. I've saw so many people on Twitter, on other social media, say, wow, before this match started, I was not an Orange Cassidy fan, but now this match is over, I can't wait to see him wrestle again. And I'm one of those. You know, I cannot wait for him to have another match. It was so entertaining. And he's very, very good. He's very crisp in the ring. Everything he does looks amazing. And yes, some of that is probably Pac as well, because Pac is so good. But, you know, I was very impressed with Orange Cassidy. I thought he looked very, very good in this. And I can't wait to see where he goes. I actually made a comment to a buddy of mine, because Orange Cassidy is so over with the crowd, that I said the biggest match in AEW history is going to be an All Out this year, and it's going to be an AEW World Title match between Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin. I know that sounds crazy right now, and it probably won't be that soon, but I guarantee you guys, as over as both of those guys are, when that match happens, it might be one of the loudest crowd reactions you've ever heard, because the crowd will be insane for both of these guys and every single thing these guys do. So I know, talking about two guys that are 6 foot or less, you know, 175 pounds and less, main eventing for an AEW World Heavyweight Championship. I know it sounds crazy to some people, but hey, you like what you like, and you're a fan of what you're a fan of. And both these guys have a huge fan base and a huge following. So would not surprise me if we saw this eventually. But congratulations to Orange Cassidy for making a star out of himself, even bigger than it was on this. And congratulations to Pac on the victory. You know, he's still up there in that title contention. And we're about to get into here in the main event. I think Pac's going to have a decent say-so, and he's going to be implemented in this world title discussion sooner than later. So let's get into it, though, guys. The main event, the Le Champion, Chris Jericho, taking on Jon Moxley. Moxley made his entrance first by he was outside the building and walked all the way in, all the way through the crowd. Crowd goes going absolutely nuts for this guy. Another thing I'll tell you about the guys about me, I know I've said that a lot tonight. being the first thing I've done, I got to bring up a couple of things. I told you guys I was at Double or Nothing last year. I was also at WrestleMania 30. Those are the two big events, the two main pay-per-views that I've ever been to. I was at No Mercy 2002, with Brock Lesnar and Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell. But the two main ones that I've been is Double or Nothing and WrestleMania 30. WrestleMania 30 was incredible. It was an awesome show. You know, it was the night that the streak ended. It was the night that Daniel Bryan was finally coordinated as the, you know, as the man, as the champion, the Yes Movement, all that stuff. I have never heard a reaction, whether, I don't want to say it was louder. I don't want to say it was, I don't know what to say. It was different. It was a different kind of reaction when Jon Moxley debuted at Double or Nothing last year. When he came through the crowd and he got in the ring and attacked Jericho and attacked Kenny, it was a different feeling I've never felt in my life before. It was absolutely insane. It was so cool. Like, it was loud. The entire place was shaken. It was incredible. And the fact that almost a year later, Jon Moxley is still getting those type of reactions for his entrance just shows how big of a star this guy is and how great the Jon Moxley character is and how people have embraced it, because there's a lot of people that were Dean Ambrose fans. They enjoyed the Dean Ambrose character, and Jon Moxley is Dean Ambrose turned up to 20, you know? So people have really embraced him, and I'm glad that he's been able to keep that, you know, that fan following and even build a bigger one, you know, in AEW. So after Moxley got to the ring, we saw a choir on stage. And the choir started singing Chris Jericho's Fozzy theme song, Judas. This was awesome. This was so cool. I thought all the ladies involved did a great job, especially the lady that was singing. There was one lady that was singing pretty much the main course, and there were some backup singers too. The lady that sang the main course was awesome. Like, she totally nailed this. It was so good. They sang pretty much the first verse and the chorus, and then Jericho's music hit, and he came out to his own music. Jericho came out with Santino Ortiz, but this was an awesome entrance. I love this entrance. It was great. And, of course, the crowd, loud as can be, singing Judas as Jericho's coming down. It's really cool. I really enjoy it. I know some people have talked about how, oh, well, Jericho's a heel. You know, you shouldn't sing his theme song. You shouldn't support him. He's a heel. I disagree. I mean, it's Jericho. It's different. It's Chris Jericho. He's the Ayatollah of rock and roll. He's, you know, the best in the world at what he does. If people want to sing his song, sing his song. Even if he's a bad guy, be a fan of him. Go for it. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a fan of Chris Jericho. So I'm all for it. Everybody that's there, sing as loud as you can. I'm perfectly on board with that. So it's about the top of the hour, about 3 hours into the pay-per-view. This is when we start our world title match. You know, this was, you know, we talked about the MJF and Cody match kind of having that WWE style, being a little bit slower, more of a storytell. This was the same way, which you have two WWE veterans in this match, so it's not surprising that we would get this, especially Chris Jericho, who's in his late 40s. But this was a good match. One thing Jericho did at the beginning of the match, which I've always been a huge fan of that he does this, is when he picks up the camera. And he uses the camera to film whoever he's wrestling against. Well, they're in the crowd. He picks the camera up, starts filming Moxley, and then sticks his middle finger right in front of the camera at Moxley. And it was hilarious. It was so funny. I love when Jericho does stuff like that. It used to be the same thing when The Rock would grab a microphone and talk in the middle of a match. It's just, it's something different, and it stands out. And Jericho's done that his entire career. So I thought that was really, really good. It was a very back and forth match. Neither guy really could get the advantage. I thought there was some near falls in it, but you know, there was never a time that you went, okay, this guy's gonna win, okay, this guy's gonna win. It was very back and forth the entire time. Toward the end of the match, Jericho was starting to target the eye of Moxley, but Moxley ended up popping up. Jericho ended up attacking the good eye of Moxley. Jericho went for the Judas Effect elbow strike, but Moxley ducked out of it and hit the paradigm shift on Jericho. And the announcer did a good job of playing it up, saying, well, how did he know that? You know, how was he able to do that? Well, Moxley takes off the eye patch to reveal that his eye is just fine, that he could see out of it, that he was perfectly fine. And then he points to the crowd to show that he can see all of them. And Moxley picks up Jericho, hits the lifting paradigm shift, and gets the pinfall. And Jon Moxley is your new AEW World Heavyweight Champion. You know, like I said, kind of a classic old school type of match. You know, they did fight on the outside for a bit, but most of it was done in the ring. You know, like I said earlier, there's a high pedestal for this show. And that was that tag team match. So anything compared to that is not going to be quite as good. This is the same way, but there was nothing wrong with this match. This match was good. I thought both guys told a great story. You know, this match had a great build to it. And I think it leaves off where maybe we're not done with this yet. I could see Moxley versus Jericho again, maybe on a Dynamite. But in my opinion, I think MJF's next. He got the big win against Cody. He only has one singles defeat since he's been, you know, in AEW. And I think Moxley versus MJF could be the next big one. I could be wrong about that. I probably am wrong about that. But that's after this show, that's what I see. And I think that's going to be a great build. Both guys are great talkers. You know, Jon Moxley's kind of your everyman. He's the one the fans like. And MJF's the cocky heel, you know, the rich guy that he's better than you. So the story kind of writes itself. And Moxley versus MJF is definitely a natural feud that I hope that we see. After the match, Moxley did cut a promo, and it was a basic promo, but it was him thanking the crowd, you know, telling the crowd that, you know, the title is for them, it's not for him. AEW was built by the fans, you know. It was a feel good promo. It was kind of the same ones we used to see from the Elite back when AEW first started. It was very similar, and you know, he He talked about how much he loves it there, and it's beer o'clock, and he's ready to go drink some whiskey and stuff. And it was, you know, the main thing about it, you could tell it was from the heart. You could tell that this was, I don't like to use real names, but it was Jon Moxley speaking from the heart as himself, being so appreciative of what the AEW fans bring and what pro wrestling fans in general bring when they're passionate and they're dedicated. So so it was a big thank you to all of them. So it was a good way to end the show. The show ran about 3.5 hours, which is pretty good for a pay-per-view. I think 4 is too much, so in my opinion. So I think 3.5 is perfect for a show like this. So, guys, AEW Revolution was just a great, great wrestling show from top to bottom. There was nothing that was bad. You had arguably one of the best tag matches of all time. You had a couple of matches that were very personal. You know, the whole thing was just great. And then, you know, throw in the Orange Cassidy match, the Darby Allin match. Those were just showcase matches for younger talent that showed how good these guys are and how great this company's hand, you know, what great hands this company is going to be in when these younger talent are older and the old talent move on. AEW's in a good spot, guys, and I absolutely love this show. Like I said, from top to bottom, I can't wait for Double or Nothing. I can't wait for Dynamite this week because Dynamite is going to be an amazing show. And it's one of those, it feels like it's kind of a post-WrestleMania type show because you don't know exactly where they're going from here. You know, you don't know what the next feud is going to be. A couple of them, you know, MJF Cody, for example, is probably going to continue. But, you know, where does Moxley go? Where does Orange Cassidy go? Where does Pac go after, you know, after getting the victory and he was up there on the leaderboards? You know, there's so many questions to talk about from here. Where do the Young Bucks go? You know, the whole thing with the Elite, you know, what's going on with Kenny and Hangman? These are all great questions that keep us on the edge of our seat and get ready for Dynamite. I'm not a WWE hater, but that is one thing we don't get in WWE anymore is this what if, what's going to happen, you know? Because most of the time, we know what's going to happen. It's predictable. But with AEW, at least recently, at least after this past Saturday, a lot of things are very unpredictable right now, and that makes for great pro wrestling. So, like I said, guys, if you guys did not watch Revolution, give it a shot. You know, heck, spend the money to order it. You know, support AEW because they are a great show, guys. But with that being said, I appreciate you guys. Thank you again for WWE Podcast. For you guys, give me the opportunity to do this. This was a lot of fun. A couple of quick plugs. You guys can follow me on Twitter. I'm at RunWithTurtles. I know it's a weird Twitter handle. I'm a game streamer on Twitch, and my Twitch name on there is RunWithTurtles. And so it's just a moniker that I've used for everything. So you guys can follow me on there. I do have my Twitch gaming site or gaming page that I do a lot. Twitch.tv/RunWithTurtles. You guys can find me on there. And you guys at WWE Podcast, you guys can cut this out if you want to. It's perfectly fine. But I do want to plug my podcast real quick. I have the Effing For Real MMA Podcast. We're about to hit our 100th episode. We talk about all the news going around in the MMA world. Our podcast drops every Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. on all podcasting platforms. And we also, every Saturday, do a live commentary and breakdown of the UFC or Bellator shows, depending on what's going on, but mostly the UFC shows. We do the fights play-by-play, give our analysis in between rounds, and it's a lot of fun. And we're actually going to be transitioning to YouTube to do everything live here pretty soon. So definitely some big projects coming up. So thank you again, everybody, for this. I really appreciate it. Thank you again, WWE Podcast, for letting me do this. I hope you guys have a great night, and I will talk to y'all soon. Take care.